Today I want to talk about a couple of different topics. I want to talk about how we make ourselves bigger and why, and that also connects to what is fed to us and what we feed ourselves. As an American, the idea that bigger is better is very common. It's basically an American anthem. More is better is another one. The idea that to get bigger, we add more energy in one form or another, and as a consequence, we're going to end up with something that's bigger and more. When we start with the idea that attention is the basic energy form that we try to get more of, human behavior starts to get more predictable. If attention is the nourishment we emotionally responded to early in life, and actually up to this present moment, and every point in between, we could help ourselves by clarifying what specific forms of attention we have become accustomed to. Positive attention to certain abilities would lead us to get bigger in those areas in some cases. In other cases, it is the lack of this energy that puts up a contrast that drives us to acquire attention in this area. Negative attention can cause us to shy away from the behaviors that caused others to shower us with negative attention. Negative attention could also lead to two other views: the sense of hopelessness of ever being effective at attaining the positive attention that we want. Secondly, the contrast between the negative attention and the positive attention sets up a strong drive to achieve that positive attention. Our relationship with attention can be viewed at each of the 10 emotional states. Briefly, in shame, attention seems to reinforce our sense of being inherently defective. In apathy, attention seems to deliver hopelessness that we could ever get the type of attention that we want. In grief, we either will be thinking of the attention we lost or will never have. In fear, we are more focused on negative attention that may be coming our way, and then we try to protect ourselves from it. In lust, we absolutely must have attention, any attention, to survive. In anger, we will be trying to control the flows of attention by stopping others from doing what they're doing, or stopping others from doing what they may start to do with their attention. In pride, we give positive attention almost exclusively to ourselves, and negative attention almost exclusively to other people. In courageousness, we learn to have fun directing our positive attention to people and things that interest us, that are fun to do, fun to explore, and so on. In acceptance, we probably understand that attention is everywhere, just like energy. We know we can direct and access attention at will. In peace, the knowledge that we are the attention that we seek. It is God, and we are always in this energy of attention that we label God. We can make ourselves bigger spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, etc. In fact, it looks as though we could look at the 12 worlds to see the environments people work to make themselves bigger. It seems obvious that some people work to get bigger financially, others in their political influence, others in their communities so as to be more causative, more creative, or perhaps to be more self-protective. If we look at the control of matter, energy, space, and time as goals, and the underlying needs of survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, and the need to look good / get approval, we will see how to predict human behaviors. Add to these two views the emotional states of the person and their particular energy exchange experience over the early years of their lives, and pretty soon the whole picture starts to come together as to their behavior and likely future behavior. Because the survival instinct and need are so powerful in living beings, self-protection is the main impulse behind making ourselves bigger. If you've ever seen a cat or a dog or a bird or a fish or other animals being threatened, you will notice that they will attempt to enlarge themselves. The cat raises its back up to make itself look larger, and dogs bark and also stand in poses. Birds put their wings out and start making noises. Fish actually expand their size, and so on. It's almost as if they hope that their enlargement, their bigness, will send a message of danger to their potential threats, and then all of a sudden those predators would go, uh-oh, maybe I better not mess with this particular creature, because their own survival now seems to be in jeopardy because of this enlargement. Human beings get bigger for the purposes of self-protection, too. Enormous muscles and martial arts skills, for instance, were the way a man that I had met some years back at a business conference dealt with his early childhood sexual abuse by the boys of his neighborhood. He decided he needed to be this big, and he was huge, 6 feet, 3 or 4, shoulders that were gigantic, strongly muscled body, looked like a gigantic football player. He felt he needed to be this big and this powerful with his martial arts skills in order to prevent any recurrence of the abuse. He got bigger for self-protection. Women commonly put on excessive weight in order to be bigger so as to not be so attractive, so they don't attract undesirable sexual attention. This is noticed pretty frequently in cases where abuse has previously occurred. In the past, I've referred to the ACE study, A-C-E, which stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And it was bigness that really set in motion this elaborate study that's been going on well over 10 years now by a joint effort of Kaiser Permanente, a large health maintenance organization in California, supported by the Centers for Disease Control, a U.S. government headquartered organization in Atlanta, Georgia, to try to understand the impact of adverse childhood experiences. A doctor was conducting a weight loss program at Kaiser Permanente, and 3 people who were doing extremely well at losing weight dropped out of the program. And when he questioned the 2 men and 1 woman, he determined that as the woman started to lose weight, she started to feel uncomfortable at becoming attractive, because she was now attracting the attention of men in an undesirable way that frightened her, and she needed to put the weight back on in order to be protected. She told the doctor that she had been sexually molested at an early age. The 2 men were friends, and they both worked as penitentiary guards in the California penal system. When they started to lose weight, they started to become smaller, obviously, and because they were no longer, quotes, bigger than life, end quotes, they started to feel insecure due to the people that they had to watch over. Upon questioning, both of them admitted to having been sexually molested as young boys. All of these people got bigger in an effort to be safe, even though bigger was causing health problems and other things to be negative in their lives. We might want to question ourselves. I'm a firm believer that the more we understand ourselves, the better off we're going to be. The more aware we are, the more knowledge we have of self, then we're going to be able to translate that into knowledge of others and be able to connect more effectively with them. So I would suggest asking ourselves questions, and here are a few that may give clues. In what context did we feel small, less than, not good enough? In what context did we feel big, more than, and good enough? Now, they're the reverse sides of the same coin, obviously, but we can start to feel where we would have been in situations, locations, relationships that would have made us feel underpowered, and then others in which we would have felt more powerful. And I would suggest that these answers could give us clear clues as to why we behave the way we do today. And, as a result of that increased insight, we're in a position to more easily revise them if we want to. To make ourselves bigger, we feed ourselves. To make us bigger, since conception, we have been fed by our mother's body and after birth both by our mother's milk, in ideal scenes, as well as other food, formula, and later on pureed foods and so on. We are made bigger by physical touch and cooing sounds, soothing sounds, and so on. These energy exchanges feed us. We're fed with energy in various forms. Air, water, food, attention, the thoughts of people around us as well as our own, feelings of others around us as well as our own, the touch, etc. Just like with food and beverages, we develop familiarity, tastes, preferences, and habits that have us seeking various energies. Food is not just food. Food is an energy delivery system. Let me explain what I mean by that statement. I like ice cream. Ice cream is a food. We generally think of ice cream as consisting of ingredients of milk with more or less milk fat, sugar, or something else as sweeteners, and flavoring, and perhaps other ingredients such as nuts or fudge and so on. If I only ate ice cream as a food, it would have no other energy attached to it, just whatever was inherent in the ingredients. However, I have memories, I have meanings, interpretations, and conclusions about ice cream from previous years of experience related to ice cream. Ice cream is just not a food. It's an energy delivery system. When I think of ice cream, when I order ice cream in a store, when I eat ice cream, I am accessing this warehouse full of energy patterns that I have created and associated with ice cream. And when I eat ice cream or think about it, I take in that energy to the degree I allow myself to take in that energy. When I eat fast, I'm basically eating plain, ordinary, solid food. But when I eat mindfully, I eat the energy that I associate with the food. When I say grace and give thanks to all the participants in bringing food to my plate, from God to Mother Earth, all the people who played a part in the production and the movement of that food, up to and including, especially, my wife for the final preparation, I believe that I'm adding positive energy to my food, and then I'm eating it. I am adding this final vibrational ingredient of love, of gratitude, and then I'm eating it. We make ourselves bigger, healthier, kinder, more loving, etc., by adding nourishing energy to whatever we take in through our senses, through our information processing capabilities. On the other hand, we make ourselves more brittle, unhealthier, unkinder, less loving, etc., by adding disempowering, threatening interpretations and energy to ourselves. It is our choice whether we see bigger as a qualitative concept or as a quantitative concept. Bigger can equal better, more effective, more in alignment with our values. Bigger can also just mean we occupy more physical space. It's our choice. I say there's more joy in the first view, that bigger is a qualitative concept rather than a spatial concept. What is the purpose of life, your life? If you ask yourself those questions and you listen and write down the answers, they'll tell you a lot about the training you've received at home, in school, with peers, in your religion, or the way you have taught yourself. Reconsidering these questions that you came up with, or more likely, the answers you were told were the answers, may give you insight into problems caused by trying to live with rules and beliefs that are erroneous. This is kind of like having trouble navigating geographically over terrain with a faulty magnetic compass. And here we are, trying to navigate through life with faulty rules and tools. It makes for a very difficult navigation. Many thousands of books have been written about life, its meaning, its purpose, on and on. Let me oversimplify it for the purposes of convenience for this talk. Life is the enhanced movement of energy toward expansion directed by a consciousness. This is my definition that I just originated. Let me read it again. Life is the enhanced movement of energy toward expansion directed by a consciousness. God is the consciousness, and human beings are points of consciousness within this field of consciousness that we call God. We, points of consciousness, also direct energy, which is also consciousness, by our attention and intention, by our thoughts, by our feelings, by our actions, including our speaking and our moving and our doing. The game of life consists of energy exchange events, of points of consciousness, that's us, and other people, things, and ideas for a variety of purposes designed to achieve any number of goals that can be noticed and measured. Goals are really the way we have chosen representation of the varieties of expansion that we are pursuing. Money represents a measurement of energy expansion. Body weight, height, blood pressure, age, titles, the declaration of victory in a given event like a football game, etc., etc., are ways that we measure expansion. When we ask a person if they have job experience in a given profession, we are simply asking if they have had energy exchanges that resulted in expansion of their knowledge in this profession. The expansion of knowledge as a result of an energy exchange event is determined completely by the translative awareness of the individual. The expansion is under our control. The fact that as physical beings we take in energy is indisputable. Less appreciated, though, is that our awareness is what translates this energy into a higher value or a lower value. As the point of consciousness, we have the power to translate energy exchange events into expansion of our effectiveness, our joy, our knowledge, our success, and our health. If I told you that a person wanted to feed a very young child, but we had to filter the food first so it would be more easily digestible by that child, you would think nothing of it. You say, oh, that's normal. Because the digestion of energy patterns, such as solid food for an infant, takes practice before that baby can be effective at it. We filter the energy we feed ourselves to. We've been taught to filter life energy that we feed ourselves. If you're a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, a Hindu, or a Buddhist, or another religion, you filter and feed energy to yourself in a distinctive way. We've been taught to filter the energies we feed ourselves about our intelligence and the intelligence of other people. And our ability to learn. We filter the energy we feed ourselves about our bodies, our looks, whether we're handsome or slim or trim or fit or pretty or desirable. We feed ourselves information about our financial state, whether we feel loved, whether we belong, and on and on. Our choices of what energies we filter and feed ourselves result in our empowerment or our disempowerment, in feeling good about ourselves or bad about ourselves, in feeling effective or feeling ineffective. How do we make ourselves bigger, and why? We make ourselves bigger by the energies we feed ourselves. This particular statement may require that we start reviewing the types of energy that were fed to us when we were children, where we would have thought this is normal, and we continue to do it, even though it doesn't benefit us in present time. Being praised as a child is the same as having been fed energy. Being scolded as a child is the same as being fed energy. To be taught to fear God is to be fed. To be taught about a loving God is to be fed. Life is about expansion. So that is why we make ourselves bigger. If we expand from a point of view that we are threatened, then our expansion will be defensive and it will be geared toward self-protection. We will expand our walls to separate us, to protect us. We will try to expand our ability to be safe by making others weak. If, on the other hand, we have the point of view of plenty and good, then our expansion will be geared to expand the presence of that plenty, of that good, into the lives not only of ourselves and of our families, but in the lives of other people. This form of bigger is based on expanded connections, increased flow of energy from us and to us, a greater participation in the game of life in which making another lose so that we can win will no longer dominate our behaviors. Because that's a fear-based, scarcity-based point of view. An area of introspection that will be valuable to us is to ask ourselves what energies were fed to us in each of the 12 worlds, and which energies do we wish we had been fed? Those worlds, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. Our behaviors in those worlds were largely set in motion by what we were fed early in our lives. As parents and grandparents, it is not too late to ask those same questions about what we have fed to our children and grandchildren and what we wish to feed to them now. We can be the conduits of this healing spirit to have them be nourished in a way that may be different than what's been done to date. I would like to end this service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the source and connection of all that is, all that we need for our nourishment. Thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for feeding us. Thank you for allowing us to direct your energy for our continued expansion of our relationship with you, for our betterment, for the betterment of our families, friends, and others, for the expansion of all the good that there is. Thank you. It is so. Amen.